Edward Troncombe's Nose. Written by Giles Milton. Read by Jonathan Keeble. Throw up your chin a moment so that I may catch the profile of your face better. Yes, that's the d'Urberville nose and chin. A little debased. Thomas Hardy, Tess of the d'Urbervilles. But when from a long distant past nothing subsists, after the people are dead, after the things are broken and scattered, taste and smell alone, more fragile but more enduring, more immaterial, more persistent, more faithful, remain poised a long time, like souls remembering, waiting, hoping, amid the ruins of all the rest, and bear, unflinchingly, in the tiny and almost impalpable drop of their essence, the vast structure of recollection. Marcel Proust, Remembrance of Things Past. Prologue. 16th of July, 1969. When Edward finally stirred from his sleep, he found himself in a room that he thought he recognized. He rolled over, opened one eye. Yes, yes, just as he had hoped. Satisfied that he was indeed in familiar territory, he pulled up the blanket and allowed himself to drift gently back into the world of sleep. He was caught in that blissful state of non-being that lies somewhere between slumber and wakefulness. He was aware of his legs, but only as weights. He could feel his hands, but only their warmth. Yet his nose was alert to the fact that something in the here and now, in this very bedroom, was causing him a most agreeable, most delectable sensation. Yes, indeed. His nose was twitching and tingling as it detected a smell of cheese that was pleasantly familiar. For more than 2 months, Edward had lain in a palsied state in his bedroom at number 22 Sunny Hill Road. He remembered nothing of being brought back to England, the boat journey to Italy, the plane trip home. The details were cloudy and intangible, as if they belonged to the world of dreams. Although he had been wide awake throughout the trip, his glazed expression had reflected the absolute vacancy of his inner head. The monks of Mount Athos had at first thought that he had suffered from some sort of stroke, that he was beyond redemption. A few of them said that he was afflicted by delusion and pride, that sins had gripped his mind in much the same way as demons can possess men's souls. Edward had still been delirious when Elizabeth brought him back to Streatham and tucked him up in the comfort of his own bed. He did not seem to recognize his wife. He had not even known he was home. He didn't speak. He spent much of his time asleep. It was as if his very life blood had been plunged into a hibernant state, and that nothing but the warmth of summer would rouse him from his slumbers. The doctors diagnosed that he was suffering from the severe aftershock that, they said, often followed a trauma. Their only prescription was sleep and rest, complete relaxation. That was what Edward Troncombe most needed. Now, 7 weeks after being helped into the marital bed, Edward's slowly ticking brain was stirred by a smell that he was sure he recognized. Yes. Sniff. Sniff. Yes. Yes. He could feel his nasal passages clearing themselves. There was a tingle in his olfactory bulb. His head seemed filled with a thick scent of goats, milksheds, and wild smilax. Oh. Yes. And then, quite without warning, and preceded by a long, loud yawn, a single word popped out of Edward's mouth. Tulumutiri. And as he said this, his nose twitched for a second time. His eyes sprang open and he found himself sitting bolt upright in his own bedroom, with his wife sitting next to him. She was once again holding a thick slice of Tulumuturi under his nose, in the hope that some flicker of recognition, something deep in the recesses of his memory, would shake him out of his slumber. Without saying another word, Edward took the cheese from Elizabeth's fingers and sniffed it again. It seemed to cast a spell over his body.